Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin, live here on Facebook and soon to be made into a podcast by the technical genius Justin. And so welcome if you're listening later on a podcast or somewhere else, and also welcome if you're here live with us today. It is a Sunday in March 2020, and Justin has chosen this brilliantly appropriate for me and probably lots of our source about vulnerability. And I am super glad to be in this conversation today, being in that very feeling. So I'm very glad to be able to process this together, Justin, and to have the magic of David White injected into our day and into our week through this lovely writing. And the world is in a strange place right now. So maybe you'll be listening in 2030 or something, but right now we've got this big coronavirus world event happening. And so personally, I have, you know, smaller, more personal vulnerabilities, of course. And yet this one, every time I read the news, is having me feel very vulnerable. And of course, in one way, I don't know what the truth of anything is, because I don't and I can't, and it's all through journalists and politicians and things. And I don't know what the best thing to do is. I don't know how to be in it, really. So to come at it from this angle of vulnerability feels like a real gift. So I'm very grateful, Justin, to be here and to have this.
Me too. Good morning, everyone. Morning, Lizzie. Well, I think if turning towards life isn't for turning towards the difficult, confusing times, I'm not sure what it is for, if we can't respond. And yes, I brought this, which we're going to read in a moment, source by David White, which I think is from his book Consolations, which is a wonderful and beautiful book, as you know, as well, Lizzie. Because I think that we need ways of talking about our situation without flipping out or distancing ourselves or numbing ourselves. And one of the things I love about David White's writing is how truthful he is about what it is to be a human, and that opens up lots of possibilities. So I'm very glad to be doing this this morning. I'm really glad we have this practice, and I know that one of our wishes for this is that it's also of benefit to others. So for all of those of you who are with us, particularly if you're living during this this uncertain time of the coronavirus in the world, welcome. One of the things I'm very struck about before we read, Lizzie, is that certainly in my lifetime, or at least in my memory, this is the first time the whole world has lived through a thing like this together all at the same time. You know, very often we have things that are going on in our own countries or locally. I've been thinking a lot as I was choosing the source about how everywhere in the world, this is now a question for everyone all at once. So I hope that this might be of help. You can always find the sources for Turning Towards Life at our website, turningtowards.life, and in our Facebook group, where we publish the source, for those of you who don't know, a couple of days before, on a Friday usually, so that you have some time to read it. And we just passed 900 members of our Facebook group this week, and I want to give a shout out for it before we read, because it's a place where if you follow this project and you want to join us and you want to be in conversation with other people, that's one way of doing it. There's an active conversation each week in the Facebook group, and you would so be willing to join us. So be welcome to join us, is what I mean to say. So you can search out Turning Towards Life on Facebook and make a request to join us there. And here is this piece by David White. Vulnerability is not a weakness, a passing indisposition or something we can arrange to do without. Vulnerability is not a choice. Vulnerability is the underlying, ever-present and abiding undercurrent of our natural state. To run from vulnerability is to run from the essence of our nature. The attempt to be invulnerable is the vain attempt to be something we're not, and most especially to close off our understanding of the grief of others. More seriously, refusing our vulnerability, we refuse the help needed at every turn of our existence and immobilize the essential tidal and conversational foundations of our identity. To have a temporary, isolated sense of power over all events and circumstances is one of the privileges and the prime conceits of being human, and especially of being youthfully human, but a privilege that must be surrendered with that same youth, with ill health, with accident, with the loss of loved ones who do not share our untouchable powers, powers eventually and most emphatically given up as we approach our last breath. The only choice we have as we mature is how we inhabit our vulnerability, how we become larger and more courageous and more compassionate through our intimacy with disappearance. Our choice is to inhabit vulnerability as generous citizens of loss, robustly and fully, or conversely, as misers and complainers, reluctant and fearful, always at the gates of existence, but never bravely and completely attempting to enter, never wanting to risk ourselves, never walking fully through the door.
To have a temporary, isolated sense of power over all events and circumstances is one of the privileges and the prime conceits of being human, and especially of being youthfully human, but a privilege that must be surrendered with that same youth, with ill health, with accident, with the loss of loved ones who do not share our untouchable powers, powers eventually and most emphatically given up as we approach our last breath. The only choice we have as we mature is how we inhabit our vulnerability, how we become larger and more courageous and more compassionate through our intimacy with disappearance. Our choice is to inhabit vulnerability as generous citizens of loss, robustly and fully, or conversely as misers and complainers, reluctant and fearful, always at the gates of existence, but never bravely and completely attempting to enter, never wanting to risk ourselves, never walking fully through the door.
It's really wonderful hearing you read that, Lizzie. Might not surprise you to hear me say that the part of this that's most feels most powerful to me at the moment is in fact right, the part that you just read at the end. That we have a choice about how we inhabit it, how we become larger and more courageous and more compassionate, or a generous citizens of loss, robustly and fully, or conversely, misers and complainers, reluctant and fearful. One of the parts that I'm noticing of living at the beginnings of this situation that we're all in is how much of me wants to fight against my and our vulnerability. It seems like a very ordinary reaction, which I want to give the reaction credence and compassion, but not be caught up in it. And the reaction, the sort of the pulling away from life part, is the part I think David White, in a way, talks about the sort of myth that we can have when we're very young, that if we hold on to it too long doesn't help us. It's the part that objects to there being vulnerability at all. It's the part of me that goes, this shouldn't be happening, and because I don't want it to happen, I want to pretend that nothing is happening, and I want to deny that to be human, that to be me is vulnerable and risky, and that it always has been. All the way along the way. it's vulnerable and risky to be a human. But there's definitely a part of me that wants to pull away from that and is resentful at having to be brought face to face with it. And I can feel that if resentful and fearful, of course. And if I don't actually turn towards that part and honor that part, I can very easily get caught up in it. I can get really rigid and self-protective as well, like a great big shout or scream against the conditions of existence. And I notice in myself something that David White points to very, very beautifully, which is that when I'm caught up in that, the locus of my attention is really on me. Mm. It doesn't go very much further than this is happening to me and I don't want it to happen to me, and how dare it happen to me, and let me make sure that I don't have to feel it and that I'm protected. Mm. And the tragedy of that, if indulged for too long, if stayed with for too long, is that it doesn't protect me any more than anything else. But what it does is it has me contract away from the possibility of care for others, but also of the receipt of care from other people as well. It's a breach in relationship. Mm. In a way, it's finding myself objecting to being smaller than I would like to be, and in the same instant trying to make myself way too big, like way bigger than the situation.
Mm. Yeah, as you're saying all of that, it's making me feel like I've forgotten that this is really what it is to be human. Part of it, that we are vulnerable to things in the atmosphere. You know, we are part of something. We're not separate from anything, and that makes us vulnerable. And I realized as well that when you were talking about how often it's like, well, you know, what about me in this, and am I going to be okay, and there's that part. And I think it's pretty clear to me in my own life anyway that our immune systems are very much most majorly affected by stress and contraction, and our immune systems are like contraction and expansion and health and unhealth, to call it something. Stress has a massive impact on that. And so for me to be contracting and to be stressing and worried is a really big disservice to me being healthy and robust and like fully in, like David's saying, like fully in life. And so it's making me think about that. And if, like we were talking about last week, I think, or maybe the week before, if I can take this as an opening to deepen into my questions, to deepen into my relationship to spirituality, to God even. I mean, I'm not a religious person, but I have a very foundational belief in something good in the world that is creative and has power. And for me to deepen my relationship to that in response to this is a very different way of responding than becoming really, really frightened and staying there. And as you say, I think my fear has a place. My fear is going to have me take actions that are important. And to just have that response feels like a, I don't know, disingenuous to my purpose, the way I wish to live. And if I'm really honest, I want to walk through those gates of existence fully and kind of launch myself through them every day. and in not accepting that this kind of vulnerability is what it is to be a person, and fighting against it and being cross with whoever I can be cross with, depending on what I'm reading and hearing, it's like that's a huge pushback and avoidance of the fact that this is what it is. This is what being human is, and this is one of the conditions, as you said, the conditions of being here. And just us talking, Justin, I can feel myself having, you know, done my normal check-in of the news, which actually I've been trying not to do very much at all, because I think if you just read the news once, you know what's going on. You don't have to sit there with it on repeat to feel the news. And just staying updated even once a day is, and sometimes not even in a day, but following closely any kind of advice or any indications of what we should be doing, I feel like that's enough to throw me into the kind of the pit, and then I have to find my way once I'm in the pit of disastrous thinking. And actually, I think for me, this is, in my experience, I'm not seeing this as very separate to the climate issues that we're facing as well. Like, because now this is to do with our bodies, there's some way it kind of magnifies the instability that I feel. And so to face it and to be in it and to be in conversation about it, I can feel is really helpful to me, because otherwise it stays in my kind of wild imagination in my mind. And it feels much more, I don't know what the word is, like relieving to be in conversation rather than just to have this. I have quite an advanced ability to catastrophize in my mind. And so when I can catastrophize that much and there's actual kind of catastrophe unfolding, the meeting of those two things is quite powerful. And I can create all kinds of worlds in my mind. And so I can feel to be in conversation about it from this perspective, which isn't like, oh, have you heard this piece of news? And have you heard that piece of news? We're not talking about the thing. We're talking about the human part of it, which is, how does it feel to be in that conversation in my mind? And how does it feel to be a person at this time when it feels so shaky and unpredictable and systemically scary and small? I feel really small. Like, what can I do? I can do various small things, but I can't do anything about the actual thing. And so I'm really grateful to come at it from this way, so that I can bring my gentleness to it rather than my quite kind of violently catastrophizing mind.
Mm-hmm. I'm really struck by you know, what you're saying, what can happen when we talk to one another. And share with one another what it's like to feel vulnerable and what it's like to feel afraid. Mm. And what it's like to feel confused and what it's like to feel small in the face of something that's very big that we can't change. Mm. And in doing so, also to find our bigness. It seems to me it's less. And this is one of the things I love about David White's writing, because he writes here about, in various ways, about the conversational foundations of this and the intimacy of it, which is that when we're not talking to one another, it's really easy to get thrown into this sort of two different poles of, I'm tiny and I'm terrified and I'm just frozen, or I demand the right to be the one who can change the whole circumstance and make it all go away so I won't have to feel it. Neither of which we can, well, we can be tiny and terrified and frozen, but we can't do the other one.
Yeah,
it's beyond us. And I think that if we don't talk to one another, if we don't find a way into this conversation, we very easily all of us at the same time contract from life and contract from one another, when actually we really need one another. Mm. You can feel how enormously settling it is, not in a everything's all right way, but in a I can find in me that which will have me meet this circumstance truthfully, because I can feel in you that which is that same thing that's possible in you. And I find out that together we can both feel afraid and confused, and we can both feel capable.
Yeah.
At the same time. And it seems to me that capable doesn't mean also being able to have things go a particular way. You know, one of the difficulties of this time is not knowing how things are going to go. You said something earlier, Lizzie, about panic, and I've been thinking and feeling a lot into sort of different bodily states I can get into, and the sort of frozen or mobilized, like I have to run around like crazy doing things, buying things or preparing things. You know, there are some really, really useful things that are worth doing here, but the body state of sort of agitation, if I don't attend to it, doesn't help. And I can feel just by talking with you now how much my body settles and opens, and then I can start to get into contact with some courage that I have. And most importantly, I think one of the things that David White talks about here is courage and compassion, which is, you know, remembering that if I feel afraid, you may well feel afraid too. And there's something, and many people may feel afraid, and there's something about knowing that we're all afraid at the same time that's really important. Mm-hmm. And like David says, it's a gateway into a kind of humanity that is really hard to get at when we're caught up in one very, very small space. Mm. As you were talking, an image came to me. I don't know if you've seen the film Saving Private Ryan, which is a war film. It's not about the situation we're in now. And I'm not trying to make a comparison between that circumstance and this, but there is the most amazing scene in that film where, in a sort of quiet bit in the film, they find themselves coming across, the American soldiers find themselves coming across a house that has been in the middle of the countryside, that's essentially been smashed in two, so that you can see the floors of the different house. And inside the house is a family with kids. And they do one very, very simple thing, which is that they help the family down, you know, out of the ruined house so that they can get their feet on the ground. And they have a chance of being in the circumstance that they are, not being as trapped as they were. And every time I've seen that scene in the film, I've thought, that's how I want to be. I want to be able to be a person who, when I come across in a situation that's affecting everyone, which is really difficult, how little I want to be the person who just shies away and tries to keep myself safe, but instead is a person who can turn towards other people and say, I'm here too. And I'm really aware that it's not easy to do unless we come at life the way that David is inviting us to, which is to really inhabit our shared vulnerability, which is to not demand that I get special circumstance before I can be the one who can reach out. Like I'd be exempt from it before I can be the one who can be of help.
Yeah, I feel that, and I'm just looking at the word miser versus the word generous citizen versus miser, and I can certainly feel my miserliness in my own contraction. And I know that my miserliness is a place that comes from feeling afraid and feeling protective and feeling like batten down the hatches and let's just weather the storm or something. And then there's the part of me that comes to this. And there's the part of me that, you know, the other night I was feeling really afraid and I called my sister and I just said, listen, I'm calling you because I'm feeling afraid. Can you just talk to me? And in that joining, I can feel my generousness returning. Am I wanting to be in connection with people? Am I wanting to reach out? And it feels like, I don't know, it's a weird aspect for me of fear to feel like I turn into a miser, because I, in a way, haven't, this experience has just has shown me that really clearly, that I can feel like I can, through other people's stories mainly, feel the response in us, a really ordinary response, as you said, to go and buy things. Apparently there was a queue around the block in just the little place where I live for hand sanitizer, and one man bought all of the boxes, so then nobody else got any because he was the first in the queue. And it makes me think, oh my goodness, yeah, that's what we're like. That's what we're like as human beings. We somehow think that my surviving and all these other people dying will be ideal. And it's like, well, I mean, of course that's not going to happen just because you don't have hand sanitizer, but if I just kind of magnify it. And I think, my goodness, but this whole deal is about being here with everybody. And you're talking of being generous and finding your generosity, of course, is in line with what we really wish for as humans, which is to be here with one another, you know, to be on our own and having everything we need, but be on our own and not part of the world, part of our communities, is not a life. And so I feel like, it feels like a spiral to me of like a this kind of contraction and expansion thing. And each time I contract, I feel like I have to find my faith again and come back to some kind of sanity and some kind of question of love or fear. And how do I keep recalibrating myself to being loving and to being generous and to see the fear around me and not find myself kind of sucked into the vortex of it? Because it's so possible. It's so possible to do that, and I do it. And I remember, I think I might have said this before, but we, this wonderful lady called Sharon Salzberg, who works, whose work is primarily focused on kindness. I remember I did a workshop with her once, and she said, somebody asked her a question about, why do I always go away from myself in meditation? And why do I always think these stupid fantasy thoughts about if I met so-and-so or if this happened in the world or whatever? And she was so kind about it. She said, listen, it's completely okay to find yourself having walked for ages down that road, because really the place healing belongs is in the return. And that it's almost more beautiful if you go away from yourself, because you get to return more. And then that's when healing can happen. So I feel like I can be kind to myself in this moment and see all the ways that I've been contracted and worried and checking the news too many times or whatever I've been doing and fantasizing about disastrousness in my head, and knowing that just coming back and coming back and coming back, that's what's to do, and that it's okay to go far from myself, and that to come back and be reminded by things like this and listening to things and talking to people and reading things that are filled with hope is a really okay way to go as well.
I love what you're saying about coming back. And it seems to me that one of the traps that we can get into is a sort of a sense that once we feel ourselves withdrawing, contracting from life, that somehow we've had it. You know, I go, oh, now I'm afraid. And now I'm afraid because I feel so afraid. Mm. Now I'm feeling guilty that I feel so isolated and afraid. And now I'm feeling stuck because I feel guilty because I'm isolated. And we can sort of wrap ourselves up in contracting moves. But at any point, there's the possibility of return. And what all return takes, in a way it's very simple, which is a kind of long breath out and say, okay, so now, yes, I've gone very, very far. It's true. I've felt very, very afraid. I do feel very afraid. and now it's time to turn towards someone else, or it's time to turn towards my life, or it's time to put all of that down so I can take care of someone, or it's time to pick up the phone, or, you know, whatever it is. That's the kindness in Sharon Salzberg's language. And I was thinking whilst you were talking about that, Lizzie, about what you said earlier about your faith in there being a kind of deeper ground to our existence, which is loving. And who knows what will happen with this illness that is sweeping around the world, whether it will be very, 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 very big or much smaller than people fear. You know, there's so much that we don't know. But one of the things that I do know is that when we do find a way of returning, we can be that presence that you talked about. The presence that is everywhere can be us. We can take care of one another, and we can we have this extraordinary ability to transcend our own smallness, to recognize our own smallness and our own fear, and nevertheless to return in a way that makes us available to other people. That we can be in this generous and compassionate relationship, intimacy with our own disappearance, inhabiting vulnerabilities, generous citizens. I know that that's true because I see it and feel it in this conversation, and I have seen and felt it many times over the last week in with other people, hearing and feeling people asking this question, which is how do we, I think the question that we're asking here that we could all ask again and again is, who do we want to be in this? Because that's the possibility that humans have, is that there is no one way for us to be. So we can panic and buy all the hand sanitizer so that nobody else can have any, which is a perfectly ordinary human response, but that's not the only one that's available to us. And I'm sure that talking with one another is the key. And I'm sure that talking one another, you said this earlier, actually, Lizzie, that there is one way of talking with one another where all we do is we amplify the stories. Have you heard? Have you heard? I heard that. Or we can pay attention to that of the news that we need to know about so that we can all take care of one another. And then we can have a different conversation. We don't have to have the one that triggers us all into endlessly into contraction. That's not the only conversation that's possible here. It's one of the reasons I'm very grateful for print newspapers, because I've just been buying the newspaper, which is bounded. It's got a certain amount of information for the day. And I can read it, and then I've taken up the practice of not checking the news all the time, because I don't think it's going to change that quickly. And even if it does, all it does is it throws me into the, so I'm just not doing it right now.
I just want to say one more thing as well, Justin. I feel like we could try and contract and therefore separate from and push away the things that we don't want to happen in the world, or we can integrate them into our experience and let them be here and find our bigness, as you said. And I feel like that's what my landing place is in this conversation right now, is if I can integrate this experience and have it be part of me, it's far more relaxing and healthy for me than to try and push it all away all the time. And I feel like that's what I'm going away with, is a renewed commitment to my sense of integration, rather than trying to deny or separate or push away, which ironically, I mean, it doesn't sound, it's a bit counterintuitive, I can feel in myself now, but it feels like if I can welcome something and allow it to be, which doesn't mean not doing all the things I can do, but in my imagination, just allow this to be something, I think my sane mind might be able to make decisions rather than my insane one. And I think that's the gift of integration, is that it gives us a kind of sanity and a kind of presence that you don't have if you're just caught up in getting rid of something and pushing it away. And it feels like a response that has more agency in it, more power in it, more sense in it than the separation part of me, which frankly doesn't turn me into an intelligent person with good decision-making abilities.
It's beautifully said, and a beautiful place for us to end, Lizzie. And it strikes me that the implication of what you're saying is that in order to do that, it really helps us also to welcome that of us which is afraid and that of us which wants to separate. Like, to even separate from our wish to separate gets us into the same pickle.
Yeah.
And that it's a practice. I think I want to say this because I realize that one way of coming at this is like that there's a standard that I have to reach, and if I don't reach it, then, but the other way of coming at it is to say, this is what our work here is the practice of including. So including that I'm afraid, but also including that I'm someone who can love.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of whatever's happening, that's always true. Really helps us to practice it so that when we're really called upon to bring it, we've got a little bit of familiarity with what it is to do that. And I certainly feel that this conversation is, for me, is a big part of it. And I think that we, you and I, and all of us, need to keep talking. That will help us enormously in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so pleased to be doing this and so grateful that we've been able to be here again this morning, and grateful to all of you who are joining us. And I want to say again, you don't just have to listen to this, although you are welcome just to listen. But if you want to be in the conversation with us, head over to find our Facebook group, which is a private members group, so it's not public, and we will so gladly welcome you there into this conversation as well. And all being well, we'll be here again next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock London time.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, everybody. Bye-bye.